You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
To mark the 400th anniversary of Henry Hudson's historic voyage to Manhattan, which was not then called Manhattan, Amsterdam's Rijksmuseum has loaned the Metropolitan Museum of Art The Milkmaid, one of the most admired and popular paintings by Johannes Vermeer. This is the first time the painting has traveled to this country since it was exhibited here at the 1939 World's Fair, and the Met has organized a special exhibition which also includes the five Vermeer paintings in its collection and select works by other Dutch artists in the Met's collection as well. Walter Liedtke, curator of the Metropolitan Museum's Department of European Paintings, joins us now to talk about Vermeer's masterpiece, The Milkmaid, on view through November 29th. Welcome back to our show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
The last time it was here, it was supposed to be for a couple of years and then stayed longer because before it was returned, Germany occupied the Netherlands.
That's right. It came for the 1939 World's Fair. That must have been the greatest exhibition anywhere in all time. And Germany occupied the Netherlands. It showed twice in Detroit. Wilhelm Valentiner was both the director of Detroit and the organizer of that exhibition in New York.
And then where did it sit the rest of the time until the war was over?
I actually don't know all the details, but I know that the last few years were in the Metropolitan. We mailed them a condition report in 1944.
Most people are familiar with this image, but can you describe the scene?
Well, we see a milkmaid in the corner of a kitchen. There's a table in front of her, a number of humble vessels and a lot of bread, an amazing window to the left with light pouring in, a basket, a copper pail on the back wall. And she seems to be making bread porridge, which was a way of using stale bread with milk and beer, and you get a kind of healthy mash that you can fill the kids up with.
Well, this is not typical of the work that we usually associate with Vermeer, but isn't this a painting considered the beginning of the mature period?
It's right on the edge. I think of it as the last early work or the first mature work. And the striking thing about Vermeer and his early work is how he is shopping around in Dutch art for different styles and subjects. And in this case, he's looking mainly to the artists of Leiden like Gerrit Dou and others who work in a meticulously illusionistic way.
Well, after this, most of the women in the paintings are the lady of the house. Here we have a servant. There was an earlier work where the woman is a procuress, which seems a little racy for Vermeer.
Inspired by Utrecht, it is his raciest picture, and it goes back to the Caravaggio followers in Utrecht. It's curious, though, that so many of the early women, they are servants in the sense that we have Diana and her companions, and in that first known picture, Callisto's in the background. She's pregnant, and she's kind of flunked out of Diana's band because she's not a virgin. The procuress would be about the third, Christ in the House of Mary and Martha, and then our own maid asleep.
Well, he was a Catholic in a Protestant country.
Yeah.
And on the whole, the work is incredibly secular.
True, yeah.
Even more secular than let's say, Rembrandt.
Well, this was the art market. Most genre painters of scenes of everyday life, painted what was popular for upper-middle-class clients, and Vermeer worked at the very top of that market.
But he came late into this, didn't he? There were already a whole bunch of other artists who had done interiors of domestic scenes, people like Pieter de Hoogh. Vermeer seems to be the last of that group. Did people see him as kind of reworking tired themes?
No, not really. De Hoogh really anticipates Vermeer only by about 2 or 3 years, and the artist he most admired was Gerrit Terborch, who was popular at the neighboring court. And when you look at earlier scenes of modern life, it's almost as if you were on a stage with bad boys being entertained by girls or whatever. And right after the truce of 1648, the views of middle-class life are elevated, and it becomes something like Vogue magazine and Architectural Digest. It's an idealized view of contemporary women.
Now, he was 25 at the time. Would that have been considered young? How mature was Rembrandt's work when he was 25?
not nearly this much. Rembrandt would have been 25, around 1630. He was working for about 5 years. There's an extraordinary acceleration between the first known works by Vermeer would be only about 4 years before this one.
This woman is larger and more sculptural than most of the figures in Vermeer's work.
It's, I would say, the most tactile, the most sculptural woman in Vermeer's work, and that's partly a response to these Leiden painters. And I almost think that he had to explore that kind of what you might call tactile illusionism to understand where he really wanted to go, which was in the more optical, light-filled direction.
What can we tell about life in the Netherlands in the 1600s from the objects and rooms depicted in this kind of art?
Well, this picture is interesting for material culture in the kitchen. It is a straightforward view of what a maid would be doing, preparing rather humble food, but it is not straightforward in the romantic component of the picture. I think there's a kind of play between the woman's respectability and diligence in the home and her physicality, her appeal to the male viewer.
And you are suggesting here, not everybody agrees with you, that a woman of this sort would have been seen as more sexually available, and that this would have almost had a titillating aspect.
Yeah, it's not about actual women of the period so much as the reputations of milkmaids and kitchen maids in the art of the previous 50 years or so, and occasionally in the popular literature. And if you read the diary of Samuel Pepys, who's in London but visits Delft to actually write a few years after this, and he is always recording his own exploits, running into kitchens and chasing after waitresses and so on.
This painting has some remarkable detail, more than I usually associate, of a different sort than I associate with Vermeer paintings, like the plaster walls, that we see nail holes, some flaking under the plaster, and then Vermeer makes a point of showing the rough stitching on the sleeves of the milkmaid. He didn't do that sort of thing in later paintings.
It's really a virtuoso display of different materials and surfaces, and when you look at Terborch or Gerard Dow or a few others, and of course the still life painters of the period, one thing that really differs in the art criticism or connoisseurship of this time from our own time is that they didn't see realism as a kind of alternative to style, as we do after abstract expressionism, etc. To us, realistic description, apart from photorealism, isn't thought of so much as a style in the sense of stylization. For them, it really is, and it's an aesthetic option. And you can display your virtuosity by describing, for example, silky materials or bread in this case.
The bread has a little, seems to almost have little sparkles on it.
It's the most extreme example of this so-called pointillé technique of light. And in here, it's remarkable because it suggests both the texture of bread and the brilliance of daylight at the same time.
Later, we see him use that sort of thing on pearls or on a glisten on a tooth.
Right.
Things of that, on a lip.
Really, in a somewhat subtler and more restrained way, although you'll notice that the pointillé is also here on the woman's apron and a few other locations, much more discreetly.
The milk pour seems to be one of the most amazing things here. Mm-hmm. It does feel real. It feels almost like it has been photographed. My inclination would have been to have shown a wider amount of milk at the top and have it come down in a thin stream, and Vermeer doesn't do that.
Well, evidently she's really measuring very carefully the amount she's putting in, and he's really looked at it. One person said it's actually a spiral, which isn't true, but it's certainly not. It's not like a thread or a column.
My guest is Walter Liedtke, who is curator for the Metropolitan Museum's Department of European Paintings. And we're talking about an exhibit that's on view for a very limited time, just through November 29th, Vermeer's masterpiece, The Milkmaid, with other accompanying pictures. In you said that that abstraction was not an issue, but I've always thought of Vermeer as a rather abstract painter, mostly a painter who used rectangles to structure his paintings, and I've often wondered if you turn them upside down whether they would still work quite well, because they seem to almost be precursors to Piet Mondrian's work.
Right.
But in this painting, rectangle isn't the dominant shape. It's rounded shapes. And we see it everywhere on her forehead, her oval face, her the slope of her head to her shoulders, the pitcher, the bowl.
Rather like a still life painter, he plays with these analogous shapes, and you see the same shape also in different planes, like the mouth of the pitcher and the mouth of the pot. I actually think that the loaf of bread in the foreground resembles her bulging forehead also. But in terms of geometry also, the composition looks like a right triangle or quarter of a pyramid within a rectangle, and the more you look at this composition, the more you see how carefully it's put together.
Isn't there a pinhole on the canvas showing that he used a shortcut to determine perspective?
There is, and this pinhole has really punctured the theory of the camera obscura in part, the idea that Vermeer traced compositions in an optical device, which is rather naive when you consider that the light lasts maybe 10 seconds, but the painting took at least 2 months to paint. And with that pin in the canvas, actually in it, he would have stretched a string with chalk on it and snapped it to get perspective lines.
I guess the reason that people think of that camera obscura is because his work, more than any other artist I can think of before the advent of photography, has the feel of photography.
Yeah.
The way he shows space, he is the way that a camera lens shows space, rather than the way most artists just painting from real life would show space.
True. There's sudden jumps from foreground to background. There are numerous optical effects of flaring light or subtle shadows, the color relationships, their intensity. And I think he must have seen such a device and been interested in its optical qualities, but tracing the composition was not one of those.
Do we know why there's almost always a window to the left in Vermeer paintings from, I guess, this painting on?
It's actually, I think it's about 95% of Baroque painting has light falling from the left, whether you see the source or not. And it has to do with the psychology of the way we read, I suppose. I know that frequently you see these paintings in a mirror and they don't work nearly as well. But it would take a psychologist to explain it to me, I think.
But then he seemed to almost always have this rectangular shape in the upper left-hand corner of the painting, giving
with
us
window.
That window. And nobody ever painted a window better than Vermeer.
Right. It gets you very quickly in the picture, that recession from the left and then the openness to the right. And this sort of left corner scheme was used for about 10 years before Vermeer, and he was very quick to pick up the latest thing.
One of the exceptions is a late painting that doesn't seem to fit in with anything that we know about Vermeer, a painting about the Catholic Church, which has a figure that does not look like it was done from life.
No, it wasn't.
It's a very odd painting.
It's big. It must have been a special commission. It's not devotional. It could not really function in a church, so it was probably for a rather intellectual Catholic patron.
So would this painting have been done for a patron as well?
We know it was, in fact. Whether it was ordered in subject matter, I doubt it. But Vermeer had a relationship with a man named Peter van Rauwen in Delft, wealthy collector and property owner. And by 14 years after this picture, he owned 21 works by Vermeer. I think he essentially had a right of first refusal.
21 works from a painter who didn't paint very many paintings. Why did he paint?
We know 36 now, and he probably painted 45 to 50 in his entire life.
Is that because he didn't have much demand for the work, or because he painted very slowly?
Slowly and carefully, and ground sometimes precious materials like lapis lazuli to make the blue pigment in this picture. His works were very expensive, 600 guilders a piece, which was a middle-class annual income.
So he was obviously considered a great artist during his lifetime.
Working at the top of the market frequently for courtiers or highly placed people in Delft.
And he would have been the big guy in Delft, just as Rembrandt would have been the big man in Harlem or Amsterdam?
But he wasn't big in the same sense, because very few people knew his work, and he was only producing 2 to 3 per year, whereas Rembrandt was, you know, had many pupils, Vermeer had none.
And so Rembrandt had other people working on his paintings.
Right.
I doubt that anybody touched a Vermeer painting other than Vermeer.
No. I remember when Washington once hung a picture called Circle of Vermeer, and I called my colleague up there and said, what the hell is that? There is no circle.
Would he have painted it in his home, or would he have had a separate studio?
No, we actually, when he died, because he had his wife and his possessions, and it was his mother-in-law's house with 11 kids, so there was a complete inventory of who owned what. We know that his studio was on the 3rd floor under the roof, facing, of course, north towards the Market Square. And he had as many as 11 yelling children running around on the lower floors.
Now, the show suggests through graphics and other paintings that Vermeer was very aware of the artists around him, artists
right.
who preceded him and artists who were working in the similar kind of genres. Would he have influenced other artists after him or during his lifetime?
He did. There was a small network of very fine painters that connoisseurs would visit, and Metsu in Leiden was one of those, and obviously responds to Vermeer. And, of course, Peter de Hoek, right in Delft, at first tends to influence Vermeer in composition, but quickly moves the other way, picks up Vermeer's effects of light, cannot duplicate them by any means, but superficially follows them.
But a pretty great artist in his own right.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, you can measure the greatness of Vermeer by the many extremely competent people around him.
And Vermeer's The Milkmaid is on view in the United States for the first time in 70 years in a new exhibition at the Metropolitan Museum, which also includes Peter de Hoek and others. I want to thank Walter Liedtke, who is the curator of the head of the department?
No, there's 4 people with the title of curator of European paintings. I am the person for Dutch, Flemish, and my new hobby, Spanish painting.
Well, they were all linked, weren't they?
Indeed, yeah.
Spain for a while owned the Netherlands, didn't it?
They owned the southern Netherlands, the Spanish Netherlands, yeah. And the Dutch broke away from that.
You can see a slideshow of images from the exhibit on our show page at wnyc.org. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks. Great to be here.